You're listening to a stage talk titled Monitoring Wagner Mercenaries in Africa. This week we were joined by Swiss-based NGO Impax, Lou Osborne. Lou is one of the lead researchers in their flagship All Eyes on Wagner project team. Within the conversation, she broadened our knowledge on the current economic and political status of Russian PMCs in Africa and raised the difficulties in reporting on these types of groups. This talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Marr, on Thursday, the 5th of June, 2025, in the Bellingcat Discord server. Please note that during the recording, Lou had some issues with her mic.
Hello and welcome to another stage talk. Back in June 2023, we watched as Yevgeny Prigozhin marched his militant mercenary group Wagner onto Moscow in what appeared to be an attempted revolt against the Russian government. 2 months later, Prigozhin, among others, died in a plane crash. Many in the media then asked what will become of the Wagner group, a name that became so entrenched with the Prigozhin name. As I'm sure many of you know, Wagner did not die with Prigozhin and is still somewhat operational around the world today, in some cases operating under new titles. Like some of you have been doing within this server, our speaker today has been tracking the movements and actions of the Wagner group for some time. Lou Osborne is an analyst and member of Impact and the project aptly known as All Eyes on Wagner. Lou is one of the lead researchers in the All Eyes on Wagner project team and also an author of a book on the Wagner group, which was translated into a lot of languages, except sadly English, but we will link it here anyway, in case, as you just mentioned, there's some French speakers in the audience and other languages. Today, we'll be discussing the movements of the group, particularly on the continent of Africa, and the strategic role the private military group plays for Russia's global influence. Lou will also be going into detail about how her team operates using open source research to follow this group. As we talk, please make sure to add your questions in the chat box via the message bubble icon in the top right corner of your screen. And please note, this is being audio recorded. So within your question, if you do not want me to read your Discord username out, please note that within the question. Okay, Lou, I'll hand over the mic to you. Tell us about yourself.
Okay, great. Yes, so I hope it's all okay. I'm very nervous now that it's not going to work. So thank you so much for joining. I hope you will hear me okay and it will not be too breaking up. So my name is Lou and I'm part of All Eyes on Wagner. What I wanted to talk today, because I guess that would maybe be interesting to you guys, it's a little bit what our group has been about, how we've been working. So basically, we created All Eyes on Wagner after a couple of French people, including me, were trained by Bellingcat back in the days when Bellingcat was starting. So we created Open Facto, and then a couple of years later, Wagner Group was getting back a lot into the media, but there was not too much done about it. So we decided to, with all the members of Open Facto, to try to focus specifically on the Wagner group. There was a lot of material available online and like a lot of Wagner mercenary taking selfie in Syria, for instance. So there was a lot of stuff existing, but nobody in the past looked at it from a global perspective and tried to compile everything. There was not too many people doing that. So we launched that project in fall 2021. And because Open Facto is, in France, we call that an association. You volunteer in that organization. It took a bit of time to land because we all have a full-time job, basically. And so it started, I think we bought the domain name around January, something like this. And basically we started working like in February 2022. And what was crazy is the war started at that moment. And so we were like, oh, wow, it's not only going to be for Sunday when it's raining and we have nothing else to do. So from the start, we sensed
that it could become a bit bigger than what we had envisioned. At the time, we were a massive team. We were like more than 30 people. And because we've been doing that on a voluntary basis, months after months popped, and we ended up, we are like four people, basically. I used to work with some early OSINT member of the community on mining, mainly mining, done by the Wagner Group. So there was a lot of question around commercial projects they had. And then we had a section which was about trying to find indicators of expansion. And so we were looking at planes, we were looking at movement, but very rapidly we started to look at information operation, influence. We understood that it was an indicator of expansion. That's a little bit how we started. We've been trying to gather a lot of information. The start of our project was, I would say, 90% open source research to what we called enhanced OSINT. And enhanced OSINT include a number of things. So that includes trying to work with human sources. So we do have people that we are friends with who are sending us tips. So we are working basically with people who are giving us tips, or sometimes we approach people to chat with them. We've been working as well with, I would say we've been doing a bit more of hardcore OSINT. So we work a lot with databases. We gather a lot of databases, emails, phone numbers that we use as pivot, basically. At the good old time, before Pavel Durov was arrested in France, we would use massively some feature of geolocation feature of Telegram. And all that combined would give us quite a good picture of a topic we would be researching. And when it's a bit difficult, we do partner with media, more traditional media, which then are going to do more traditional investigative journalist work. And they're going to really plug themselves in the gaps that we have so it can complete those gaps. So that's really how we've been working over the past now, I would say, 1 year and a half. For us, we don't put any limitation to how we get the information. What we want is to get the information. That's really the primary objective. So we've put, not too many limits to the way we approach that. What has been quite interesting as well, maybe for future investigation on your Bellingcat Discord, is really the transition between Wagner as a kind of semi-private organization to really the visible involvement of the Russian Ministry of Defense. And for us, this is really changing the way we are doing research. Because obviously it's more difficult, like if you end up investigating spies or people who are working in the intelligence, they have been trained to conceal who they are. And so that has become more and more complicated. So we are really focusing on following actors. We are really focusing on identifying people that then we're going to see pop up here and there. And that has really, like, that chase, hunting that way has really been part and parcel of the way we approach things. So that's a little bit basically how we work. We don't cover everything because for people it's impossible. So we miss a lot of information. So we are always very happy to receive some. But what we are trying to do is really have an understanding of the strategy of Russia using PMCs or semi-private paramilitary organization to pursue their foreign policy goals. That's one thing we are trying to understand. And the other thing that we are trying to understand, it's really what's the role of Africa in a bigger view of Russia and Ukraine, Russia power projection, Russia influence strategy. So that's really like the thing to focus on. And that's why the investigators we write about, they are often quite, strategic in the sense that we really try to hit strategic things for them. So the gold, the diamonds, revealing who are the chain of command, big massacres, big organization that are actually influence organization run by the intelligence services. That's really what we are trying to focus on. So that's a little bit who we are. If you want, I can very quickly give you an overview of what we've seen and maybe try to answer the $1 million question, which is what is Wagner now? And that is not yet what we know. I mean, we don't have the full answer, to be honest. So basically what we've seen was quite interesting because at the moment of the big march on Moscow by Prigozhin, so back in June, late June 2023, we saw on a number of actors that we are following and digital assets, so fake social media accounts, we saw a little bit of a freeze. People were, you know, a bit shocked and even the organization in itself froze a little bit in June, July, with big question on whether Prigozhin would fall out of a window, be killed, or whether he would survive. So it was quite an interesting time to really monitor the actors or the organization that we've been all the time looking at. So that was an interesting point. But very rapidly, there was basically that Russia-Africa Forum, which is a very big moment for Russian-African relationship. And we saw that Prigozhin was not invited to that. And on the contrary, we saw a very well-known figures, the GRU, so one of the key GRU leader, General Andrei Averyanov, really appearing in all those meetings. And we knew at that moment that things would started to shift to more Russian MOD type of relationship. So how have we approached that? It's very difficult. We've been trying to track all the movement of those guys, so of the Averyanov, the official delegation of the MOD, to really start seeing where they were going as indicator of influence, expansion, or a way of maintaining Wagner power. We realized at the time that they tried to kind of kill the Wagner brand by launching a competitor called Africa Corps, specifically in countries where Wagner did not exist at the time, so Burkina Faso and Niger, and later on Equatorial Guinea. We saw that new brand did not work very well, to be honest. And recently, and I think it was beautifully tracked by one of the attendees, Ryan, who is there, we see that they have replaced it now with something called Wagner Legion. So that's what we've seen. And then in parallel, we've seen the historical Wagner trying to survive in the Central African Republic with a figure that we follow very closely, which have really taken a lot of power and he's called Dimitri City. And he's really in charge of a lot of things going on in CAR. We've seen that in Mali, they actually faced a very big failure last August 2024 with a battle that took place between them along with the Malian army and against a Tuareg armed group. And the Tuareg armed group really, I mean, excuse my French, but beat the shit out of them. And that enabled basically the more MOD-related organization to start entering Mali and trying to displace the historical Wagner. For us, Russian Watcher, this is not too much a surprise. It's quite a common pattern if you explore Russia intelligence services or power dynamics in Russia. And that's really the idea that now Putin, who has really threatened by the figure of Prigozhin, is trying to control the situation by fragmenting actors that are actually taking part in that big project of Russia in Africa. And so we see different actors like the GRU, the MOD. Below them, we see small volunteering groups, or we see small PMCs or old security companies that are, you know, taking a little bit of the cake. We see the Wagner group still existing because it's still useful for the Russian government in the Central African Republic. But we see that fragmentation as a way to rule, basically to control the situation. We've seen as well that basically the Africa has been quite important in terms of influence for Russia. And that was what I very briefly wanted to talk about is really how they have been using gold as a way to fuel or to give access to Russia to cash, and that is really what has evolved over the past few months, after the death of Prigozhin. So recently we've worked on an investigation called Dig Baby Dig. And we have revealed that in CAR, the Wagner group has started the operation of a very big gold mine called Idere. And Idere is really important because it would be actually bigger than Ndassima in terms of production, gold production. And the gold is allegedly going to the UAE to be sold. And in return, they get cash, which can be shipped in banknotes to Russia. And that participates to grant Russia access to hard currencies in dollars, in euro. It works a little bit like a mafia. But we've seen that now along a couple of other players. So Nordgold, which is a legit company in Burkina Faso. It's a Russian company, a gold mining company, but a normal one, which is established in Burkina Faso. We looked at it and we saw that they are doing exactly the same thing as the Wagner Group. They go through very cumbersome networks of companies to then ship gold to the UAE. When we did Dig Baby Dig, we found out as well another network of company in the DRC, so in Congo, and managed by Russian people. And basically, they buy gold in DRC, maybe to the Wagner Group, we don't know yet. And they sell that gold in Dubai. And what is quite interesting is in Dubai, we can find that they have partnered with a cryptocurrency organization, which is again managed by Russian people, and the fact that we see all those networks converging, interacting with each other, is really at the moment the trend in what we see in Africa. That's not anymore only the Wagner Group, but it's really a galaxy of actors that are there for investigation. So I encourage you to do it. And that all play quite a key role in bringing gold back to Russia or in pushing Russian influence in Africa. So that's really a galaxy of actors, legit actors, criminal actors that are really all participating to Russia's big objective in terms of foreign policy and influence. I hope it's okay. I think maybe it's better if you ask me questions so it will be a bit more interactive. And I can see the first question, which is, what are the area of Congo I see Wagner in? So actually, Wagner, as from what we know, Wagner tried to enter Congo a couple of years ago. And I think even there is a plane at the time that in which Prigozhine was that crashed. And then there was the rumor he died in Congo. But what we understand is that they never managed to reach any agreement in Congo. That's a little bit where we are at in terms of knowledge. But what we have found out is that actually there are a number of Russian nationals in Congo. And we have identified one company managed by Russian people, which could have some remote link with what Wagner is doing in the area, and is really in charge of buying gold, is located in Kinshasa, buying gold, and then selling the gold. Yes, Romanian mercenary, that's correct. I will try to read all your questions.
It's all right, Lou. I can read it out if that's all right.
Okay.
Okay, so thanks so much for answering Sarah's question there in terms of what areas of Congo are you seeing. Philip asks, in your opinion, is the Wagner Legion part of the African Corps or a completely separate entity? Can you confirm that the Wagner Legion commanded in Mali by Ivanov has replaced the Wagner Group's units in Mali? Are they conducting combat operations there or only trainings? How do you estimate the number of Russians in Mali? So there's about 7 questions in there, in that one question. What's your knowledge of it within Mali, I think is the main question.
Yeah, so what I can confirm is that Wagner Legion is affiliated with the Russian MOD. That's like a fact. They actually even acknowledge it publicly. So that's affiliated with the Russian MOD. Now, what is the extent of the relationship with Africa Corps? Noting that the way we understand Africa Corps, we understand it as a kind of a brand, a marketing name, a kind of umbrella, which is managed by the GRU. And underneath it, you have a number of different type of staff, volunteer brigade, probably PMCs that are having contractual engagement with the MOD, that kind of thing. So for us, so far, our knowledge is that the two are pretty linked. And so we think it is pretty close. Whether or not they are managed by GRU is another question. Today we don't know, but it's pretty close to the MOD and MOD affair. So that's how we put it in the same basket. So according to the sources that we have, it's not like 100% accurate and to be taken with a pinch of salt. We understand that there are still some historical Wagner people in Mali, but that they are gradually replaced by MOD-led fighters. We don't know what they are doing there very well. We don't know to which extent they really go on the front line. At the moment, pretty obscure. And so far, in terms of number, the multiple messages that we got where that the number remain more or less the same. So we are around 2,000 people. That's so far the information that we have had. But again, it's very difficult to measure. It's very difficult to have an accurate picture. So I would take all of that with a pinch of salt.
Great, thank you. I think that also partially answers Mike's question as well. I just wanted to go back to the gold investigation that you spoke about in the Central African Republic. I've put the link to that in the chat. I really recommend going to have a read of it. It's a fantastic investigation, so congratulations on that. You mentioned within that investigation that often these Wagner groups that are working within the resource mining space are working under multiple shell companies and different names. How difficult is it to do that kind of network analysis and identify affiliated companies with the Wagner group? What kind of roadblocks do you come across when doing that kind of network analysis? And are you seeing new companies popping up all the time?
So it's very difficult, to be honest, for a couple of reasons. So the first reason is more a technical one, which is in that part of the world, you don't have too much open source information on corporates, commercial registries. They are not available online. So the first big work we did was find a way to get access to local commercial registry. And so that comes with, I would say, more or less success, with more or less complete data, that kind of thing. So that's roadblock number one. Number two is, in the past, you would see a Russian element very fast in the landscape. So they often use a straw man or straw woman, a front person who is the director of the company. But very fast, you would see some sort of Russian affiliation that has evolved. And now they are really trying to put a lot of effort to conceal the link with Russia. And so how does it materialize? In the past, they would set up websites to promote their company. And so very fast in the technical investigation of websites or emails or phone numbers, you would find a Russian. So it was quite cool. This they have started to phase out. There are not too many now company affiliated with Wagner that have a website. Often the way they create the network is they're going to have an operating company. So for instance, for the mine, for Idere, is going to be called Heavy Industrial. So it's really the company that is going to sign a contract with the state, for instance. And that company often is local. So in that case, it's a Central African incorporated company. And then they will not have a physical shareholder, but they're going to have a legal entity, which is a shareholder of that company. And this is where the Russians start appearing. So that's, I would say, two levels down the line. And so that's where it starts to be more difficult. The way, basically, each time, what we have are more or less solid, open source, circumstantial evidence. We're gonna see that they are promoted by a newspaper or website that we know are strongly affiliated with Russia. We're gonna see that, for instance, they import equipment from Russia. We're gonna see that they are linked to some reason to companies that we know which belong to the Wagner Galaxy. So that's a little bit how they do. And then if you start to explore Russian actor in Africa in general, so not necessarily criminal group like Wagner, you see that the way they operate is they often partner with a local partner, with an African partner. And very fast, so if I take my example of Nordgold, they are under sanction, so they cannot sell gold on international markets. It's forbidden by the international law. So they need, at some point, to conceal the fact that they are not gold. And the way they do that is they partner with a Mauritanian guy who has company a little bit everywhere. He has company in Mali. He has company in Guinea. He has airlines. He has a company in Dubai. And that guy, very fast in the supply chain process, take a custody of the gold and put his company, the label of his company, on the gold. And so suddenly, this is not Nord Gold anymore. It's this guy. And so it's possible. Another things we are looking at is the logistics, because they use mainly airlines that are extremely affiliated with arms transport, mercenary transport, Russia. So that's all the things that we are trying to follow to build that understanding.
Thanks. It's really useful, I think, for people to understand how you build those relationships, because it's quite a difficult, as you said, process to kind of pin all of those different groups together in one long story, basically. Sveer's asked, is it common to see Wagner interacting with security providers like the UN, in particular MIN USCA? What's the motivation there, if there is one, beyond just being in the same place at the same time? Have you seen any patterns like that?
Yeah. So maybe I will shock Sveer as well. Wagner is interacting with a lot of NGO, international NGO in CAR. Why? Because several reasons actually is quite interesting. So one is because they control specific areas where in the country where NGO need to go to do their mission. So for instance, if they need to set up an hospital, maybe the hospital or the medical center is in a geographic area which is under the control of Wagner. So they will have to interact together and even find a good working relationship if, you know, they want to be able to do that. So that's number one. In CAR, the MINUSCA, so that's the International Peacekeeping Force, they are in charge of all the, of a very big part of the airport network in CAR. So again, there is some sort of a modus operandi to find to be able to fly and land on places which are operated under the control of the MINUSCA. At the same time, I would balance that argument because in the case of the MINUSCA, we know that since 2017, so pretty much when Wagner arrived in CAR, the kind of influence communication team that went along with the mercenaries, they set up an influence project which has for objective to really discredit the MINUSCA. And since 2017, you've seen a lot of influence campaigns which are targeting the MINUSCA to try to kill basically the program. So that's, you know, it's not all black and white, it's a bit gray. And this is a bit what you see.
Fascinating. We've had a couple of questions on funding. So Nihas, are there private individuals you've tracked funding Wagner and other Russian PMCs? And are any of these individuals connected to the funding of far-right movements or American far-right movements? And Mike asked, regarding some of the older training camps and forward outposts originally established by Wagner in Western Central African Republic, early reports suggested many of these were funded through Wagner's own discretionary local budgets. Have these installations now been formally absorbed under the MOD's purview, or are they still operating through external shell companies or GRU-affiliated intermediaries? Can you talk a little bit about how Wagner's and other similar Russian PMCs are funded? Do you see individual funders, and has those old Wagner groups now been established in terms of funding under MOD or GRU affiliated intermediaries?
So Neha, that's the $1 million, even $1 billion dollar question. It's very difficult It's very difficult to assess because that means to have access to very sensitive information back in Russia, which is the most difficult. So what I can say from what we've seen, what I know, so if we look at Wagner historical, so when Prigozhin was alive, we understand that there was probably a bit of double funding in the sense that Prigozhin was getting some money through his other businesses. Maybe it was money that was injected on purpose, but he was getting money from businesses basically that were down, that were then funneled to Wagner operation. We understand the group likely fed directly by the Russian government because it was part of the global war effort. And we know that there have been a lot of logistic enablers to the historical Wagner, which were provided by the Russian MOD. So that's a little bit that we see. For the current situation, so fragmented PMCs, all of that, we don't know, we don't have this information. We don't really know whether we have not seen, we don't have access to documents or information that would prove that, for instance, the head of Gazprom is funding some stuff that I remember there was allegation, there was a suspicion that Oleg Deripaska would be funding PMCs. This we've not seen it because we don't have access to the documents. But knowing a little bit how Russia works, it's highly likely that there are some alliance between the government and rich oligarchs that need to showcase loyalty to the regime. So highly likely, but we don't know. For your specific question on the far-right movement, American far-right, what I know is an individual like Malofev, again, who is quite a prominent oligarch, very close to the Orthodox Church. He has been funding some initiatives, both connected to the US and connected to some fake NGOs in Africa. And if I remember correctly, it's Ghana. So that's what we know. And it's, I think you can find articles about it. It's more or less clear. But it's very difficult. That part is very, the money is very difficult.
Amazing. Thank you. Okay. Scoot has asked, have you observed competition between Wagner / Africa Corps and China in mining and resource extraction? If so, how do they resolve it? Do they ever collaborate? You mentioned UAE's name earlier in terms of trade. How are the competing countries managing kind of the resource extraction relationships that are ongoing throughout the continent?
Yeah, so that's a topic we are really, really interested about. And I'll explain you why. So we are really excited about it. We would love to dig more on it. Because that's a little bit of a mystery. We see two things. So first, we see on the mining side, specifically in car, that there has been competition. And we know that in car, most of the mining was controlled by companies that are more on the side of Chinese organized groups rather than big established Chinese company. And basically, Wagner displaced them totally. They have really moved them away in order to take over some parts. But at the same time, from a communication perspective, I think we have all seen those photos where we see the Wagner group saving the Chinese miners in car. So from a communication perspective, there have been the willingness to show some sort of support, collaboration, alliance, which maybe reflects the current geopolitical situation of China ally with Russia. At the same time, we have noticed something else, which is more on Africa Corps side. In Burkina Faso, when we look at network of influence, so really, you know, info ops, what are the fake accounts they are using, blah, 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 we see the influencers that they are mobilizing, you know, to bring on messages. We've noticed that they have used both Facebook accounts, and they have relied on individuals that historically have been really pro-China, really linked with China. And today, we don't know whether it is purely opportunistic because maybe those networks and people are for sale or for rent. So maybe it's purely opportunistic. We don't know if it's because there is a share, the same messages that are conveyed, so it's automatically kind of amplified, or whether there is a kind of deeper cooperation between Russia, China, and then at which level. And this we don't know, but it's very exciting.
Thanks for sharing. I wanted to ask, and I know Ryan wants to learn a little bit about your book. I will come back to that question in a second. I wanted to ask, how do Wagner and other Russian PMC groups speak to each other? Kind of what channels do they make use of? Have you seen them openly posting on social media, for example, about their activities in certain regions? Or is it very much more private and close quarter at the moment? Because during Prigozhin's time, it was quite common to see some mercenaries speaking about some of the posting images and speaking a little bit about their activities. Is that something that's continued in the current form of Russian PMCs, or is that something that's kind of faded away with Prigozhin's era?
So there are a number of things. I would encourage you to read a great investigation done by Dossier Center, which I think is called IT Prigozhin, and they describe the technical solution at the time the Wagner Group used, which was some sort of secure telephone, customized messenger app, that kind of thing. But because it was so cumbersome to use, they dropped it very fast and went back to use their own personal phone, which is funny because it shows how security as is always very difficult to implement in groups. We see much less direct communication of fighters on social media. I think there have been a lot of education, OPSEC education that took place over the years. But what we see, it's that old saying, if you can't enter by the door, enter through the window. And so we see a lot of chatters online on forums that are for families. And families, they discuss a lot where their loved ones are, what's going on, whether they are coming back. So that's quite interesting to follow the families. And then obviously Telegram channel, but I would take that with a bit of distance because their primary objective is propaganda, and so you need to be careful about that.
Really good point.
There is always a way to go through the window, so
yes, of course. Really good point on the Telegram as well, just to be aware of that. Subtle Knife has also just linked the investigation that you referenced in the chat as well. Thank you so much for doing that, Subtle. I'll also include it in the description of the podcast as well if you're listening back. Ryan asked, what's the content in your new book like? Really enjoyed the last one. In regards to La Méthode Wagner, what does that book focus on?
Wants to read it. Thank you so much, Ryan. So basically, when we wrote the first book, we finished to write it the day the march happened, which was both great and terrible. But that was that. And so basically the second one is more of an update of the first one. And we really try to put in all what we learned during the first year post-Prigozhin, and try to rebalance a little bit our analysis. So not too much, a lot of changes, but not dramatic if you have read the first one. it's more complete, basically.
And I've linked the link to your book, your full list of books as well, higher up in the chat. And again, I'll do that in the description of the podcast too. Sphere asked again, how closely is Dimitri Siti involved with the Wagner T. Azandi? Sorry, I'm probably butchering those names. And should the AAKG and WTA be considered largely the same militia group?
I have no idea. Simple answer.
Quick and efficient there. No worries. I wanted to ask as well, just as we have time, what are some of the open source tools or tips your team could not live without? Just going away from the actual context of your investigations, what kind of tools and techniques do your team use on a regular basis that you could just not live without when it comes to tracking the movements of these types of groups?
Yeah, so I think we are not that techie, to be honest. But what we are really using, which for us is really important, it's all those solutions that help you assess all the services connected to a phone number or an email address. And for us, this, so like, I don't want to give any brands, but yeah, all those tools. And for us, this is quite important because we think those are strong connectors. When you have a phone number or an email, it's a strong connector. And so we really like that. And today, because you use your phone or email to register to a lot of things, that give you really your full digital footprint quite rapidly. So for us, those tools are really, really... yeah, really paramount. Maybe the second one would be commercial registries, because there are a lot of information into them, and we do use them a lot. And then we have ventured in trying, but we have not used it in our investigation. We've just seen it. Maybe two things. One that we have tried, and those are the facial recognition softwares. So those one are really useful. And the second one, which we have tried but not used in investigation, but which is mind-blowing, it's really everything related to ad int, advertisement intelligence, which is quite controversial, but can be extremely powerful when it's used correctly on the Wagner case.
Yeah, really interesting. If you want to learn a bit more about ad intelligence, give it a Google. I'm sure Luke maybe pop some links in the chat as well if it's interesting to anyone. And yes, sound has been great, Luke. Thanks so much. It's smoothed out a lot. Okay, final question. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about Wagner's and other PMC groups' economic activities within the African continent. But there's also been quite a lot of reports of human rights abuses by the group and other related PMCs and other related militia who've been working with them. How do you go about documenting them if you do? And do you report them to any authoritative body when you come across them? For example, Human Rights Watch in December claimed Wagner and the Malian army had deliberately killed at least 32 civilians, including 7 in a drone strike, forcibly disappeared 4 others and burned at least 100 homes and military operations in towns and villages in central and northern Mali between May and December of 2024. Do you often come across human rights abuses within this work, and what are your processes for reporting those?
Yes, so we have worked a lot with international mechanism or authorities around the Wagner Group. We have mainly worked on sanctions. But we've also worked on human rights abuses. So basically, what is quite difficult is finding a good proof and then finding a kind of evidence, chain of custody or chain of custody of evidence. So we've worked on it in Mali. And up to 2023, you could get a lot of footages, I mean, a lot in between brackets, but you could get footages on social media. And so we could collect that, we could archive that. And that was the start. What has been extremely complicated for human rights, the prosecution of human rights abuses, it's actually being able to say that the Wagner Group was there at that moment. So how do you cross basically the abuse with the perpetrators and to build the full chain of command? We don't really know, we don't really have the detail of chain of commands in some places. And so that has been quite difficult to cross those data together. So that has been, quite difficult. And for a very long time, so we were part very early on a very big working group to try to understand how we could prosecute Wagner. One of the big hurdles that was taking place at that time was to show to which extent the abuse are taking place because you have crazy people that are operating. You know, you have two crazy guys that have lost it and they kill someone. Or is it a strategy? And who is giving the order? Is it the boss in Mali, for instance? Is it the boss in Russia? Or is it Vladimir Putin? And that chain of command and order is really the most difficult one for prosecution.
Absolutely. And it's often really difficult to kind of prove that connection and to monitor that. So thanks so much for sharing how you attempt to do that in your work. I think we should wrap there. I don't want to keep you too much over time, but thank you so much, Lou, for your time today and for your patience as well with the connectivity issues at the beginning. And thank you to everybody who's come in the audience as well. Thank you so much for listening. And if, as I mentioned in the chat, if you want to continue this conversation, we do have a space within the server called Wagner in Africa that you can go and chat about these issues within there. And yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks' time for another Stage Talk. Thank you so much, Lou.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience with my audio. Thanks. I hope it was okay.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Stage Talk. If you'd like to catch a Stage Talk live where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.